it's Herbert. And you're listening to the About Last Night podcast, you slippery little son of a bitch.
I went to bed about 9, so I got a good 6 or 7.
Okay.
So it'll be about, what, 2 p.m.? It'll be like mid-afternoon when I get to watch the country fucking set itself on fire, whatever's going to happen.
It's all nuts. I just voted.
Good.
I don't really – are we recording?
We don't have to keep any of this in.
Oh, well, I just, you know, I'm one of these guys like, whatever happens, we'll roll with it. I'm just like, I just want it to be done. I want the news to be boring again.
I know, dude. It is. I posted this clip of, by the way, your tweet that you just posted was fucking, well, I guess 9 hours ago. This feels like the OJ verdict, except we're all the Brown family.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. Yeah, that was dude. A fun one.
I love me. And here's the thing about anything OJ related. It's never going to not be like there's never going to be a time when it's like, you're still doing OJ jokes, huh? Hey, man, he's still tweeting videos.
Exactly. Exactly. So, he's still tweeting videos. The wife's still headless. The Kardashians are still around. I mean, it's what's the word? Not pungent, potent.
Poignant.
Evergreen?
Yeah, that might be it. Yeah. There's no shelf Something life like for OJ jokes. As there long as go. He's tweeting videos outside of Ralph's being like, hey, guys, the juice here. Hey, yes, you just restocked on Charmin, you know, or whatever the fuck he's giving updates on. By the way, yeah. Chloe, definitely his kid.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, I saw her throw a football once in a video. I was like, geez, that's the juice. That's Orenthal's DNA. Yeah,
yeah. Orenthal, that's right.
You got great eyebrows.
Oh, thanks, man. This is the Russian Jew, man.
The best in the biz.
They get a little bushy, so I try to I try to trim them up, but you know.
I mean, women would kill for those. I know a couple Armenian whores that would scalp you for those things.
How are you finding? What's a better audience? Let me just open with a park or a roof.
Definitely a roof. No. If, ands, or anal. I mean, it's a park's got kids playing. It's got a bird shitting on you. It's got a siren. A roof. Sorry, a little semen. A roof is, you know, just it's at least a little bit intimate and secluded. It's up here. It's a million miles in the air. And there's some kind of wall structure around you. It's a little bit more of a stage. But the park is just willy-nilly.
Yeah, are people buying tickets for it, or is it just like you're screaming at people to try to come by and give you their attention?
No, these comedy clubs out here, they're doing great, or they were. I mean, it's getting cold now, but they're cleaning up. They were doing like 10 a day. They start at 4 p.m., go to midnight, and they would fill up. They're doing better outside than inside.
Is it, I think what you can probably attest to this, you're just so happy to be like getting reps in, right? That it's not even, or does it make you like how much of the, and I think I've heard you talk about this, like missing all the ins and outs of performing and traveling that was kind of a nuisance pre-COVID. That now it's just like, yeah. Oh man, give me a shitty hotel soap or a racist audience member or an anti-Semitic yes. maid, you know, like somebody that's going to just get under my skin. Like now I want conflict.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I've said it before. I'll say it again. I took for granted all the little things, the flights and the drinking with the staff and getting upgraded to first class, like all those great little moments of doing the road and or the new bit or, you know, having a riff with a guy and then that riff becomes a bit or you think of something in the car on the way over. All that stuff I loved. That was my whole life. And
yeah.
I got a real problem. I don't know how you are, but I'm a real time guy. I'm like, all right, now I got it. I probably got like 40 more years to live. All right. And today is one day out of this whole year, and I wasted it. Like, if I'm hungover for a day, I hate myself because I lost the whole day of my life.
Totally. Yeah. Have you always thought like that? Or when you kind of got cleaned up booze-wise, is that when you kind of had a more appreciation for the day-to-day?
Probably like 29, 30 years old, it started to like sink in, like, oh, I lost a hair. I don't have a good metabolism anymore. I'm gay now. It's all started shifting.
People don't compliment my pubes anymore.
I got a couple grays in there. And with stand-up, I'm like, and that's what I love about it is you can create something and then have it. Like, there's my first album. There's a podcast we did. There's a Tonight Show I did. Like, there's all these little things you can collect over the years, all these accomplishments. But with the COVID, it kills all that because you're like, I'm wasting time. I can't get up tonight. I can't write a new bit because I can't try it out. And I can't do TV because there is no TV.
Yeah.
And so it's fucking with my whole time thing.
Well, it didn't seem like you wasted too much time. Obviously, I think everybody was in that middle ground for a little bit because it was like, you know, everyone was kind of like, oh, things are starting up again. So it was like, all right, cool. If I have to hunker down for a month, you know, what? So be it. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. And then when that tunnel just got longer and the light wasn't apparent, it was like, fuck. All right, now I got to start not only putting pen to pad, but like you were doing the man on the street type shit. And then there was a video you did way early on where it was pouring down rain. I think you were doing it just for cars, or was it? It was almost like a short film. You've done a handful of them, but right? What was it?
My video guy got like a wild artsy fartsy hair up his ass. And we did the Park Norman. We did the roof. We did the trailer park.
Yes.
And he said, for this rain one, I'm going to do it black and white. I'm going to make it real sad. And I'm holding an umbrella and a lightning bolt hits me. I mean, it was like a little short film, I guess. But that was just for cars in a driveway of a diner or a parking lot. And yeah, that was a sad thing. But that's me just being like, here's some content. Here's some thing I can say that I've been alive for. You know, here's something I've done. I just hate the wasted time.
Well, and you were right to do that because it's like, not only do you feel starved for the interaction between comic and audience, but it's like if you're not at least even getting like the reps of stand up, but just like keeping yourself in the flow of being creative, like that's something that it's like, all right, control what you can control. Like, can you like you even thinking and putting and planning and then going and doing it? You're like you were flexing all the muscles and keeping your mind sharp because you're still having to kind of like, you know, put in all the ins and outs of putting that together and what jokes you were going to do. And what's the worst thing that happens? Like, oh, it's not the ideal performing thing.
Right.
Oh, you have to adjust. Oh, you learn from an experience because it's not, doesn't go the way that you planned it. I think it was the great Sean Connery that said, rest in peace, that you can hit a woman if it's open-handed. Yes. But you get what I'm saying. He did say that, by the way. Did you please tell me?
I watched it. It's my background on my phone. I loved it just because
it's my email audio. As soon as I get a eugenics email from Frank Thomas, it's like you can hit a woman if she open hand, and then I'm like, oh, Frank Thomas sending me dick pills.
Right. I mean, I love it just because she kept trying to like nail him to the wall, like in a gotcha moment. He's like, no, I'm telling you, I do this. I'm telling you, I think it's fine. And then I thought he was going to hit her. But in a weird way, it's kind of equality. But, you know, who knows what's going on there? But
how do you view canceling? Well, it's like he probably also. I mean, I don't know. It's so funny when that stuff comes out, like when people die, because then I'm like, you're trying to cancel a dead guy?
I know. It's a weird instinct we have. Like, oh, John Wayne, get him. He said this. Like, he's done. It's over. Like, what about RIP? Let it go.
What about RIP? Yeah. Also, and then on the flip side with Connery, it's like, dude, some stuff, just take it to the grave. Like, it's fine if you think whatever happened to just, like, not saying everything you think. You know, like, especially if you're not, like, you know, like – I don't know. Like, hey, man, if he's with a small group of buddies and he's like, you know, I think it's fine. Like, if women don't know when enough is enough, it's like, all right. Like, there's probably one guy in that conversation that's like, yeah, Sean, I mean, like, I don't know, man, like, but, you know, it is your wife. It's like, yeah, but, you know, she fucking deserves it. You're like, yeah, all right, man, is the bathroom, is it in the, is the one in the bedroom I can use? Like, there's a, probably a time and a place, but also part of me respects that he's like, I'm on national TV. Barbara Walters is going to try to, like, peg me in a corner, and I'm just going to kind of, like, not back down who I am. But
yeah, first off, I've been pegged in a corner before. It's not great. But secondly, yeah, I think you're right. Like, it's one thing, I've never hit a lady, but, like, if I did, I wouldn't be talking about it. That is a weird move. Yeah, he was like a boxer, too.
Oh, yeah. He was also just so – I mean, he's a – you know, he's an intimidating fella.
Oh, yeah. He was like a bar fight guy. He was like a bodybuilder at one point. He's the real deal tough guy.
I wonder if it's one of those things, too, that, like, has happened on other, like, movies. Like I wonder if Harrison Ford is well – you know, is – you know, if he'll come out and be like, oh, yeah, he used to say that, like, in between takes – sometimes he would just improvise dialogue about hitting women. Just like, right. Like, hey, man, it's not even in the script. You're supposed to be asking me where the
just where the Nazis are. It in.
Yeah. He's like, I wish the Nazis were women so we could really hit them. You're like, all right, dude, that's.
Yeah.
That wasn't in the script.
Thank God he was 90. What if he was born now? He'd have a podcast called, like, you know, Hitting Bitches or something. That'd be the whole theme.
Hit it and quit it. Yeah.
there you go.
What is having, you've been with your gal for how long now?
Oof, a couple of years.
Nice.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
I think I saw
as
you guys
say.
Yeah, I think you saw, I think it was a little bit ago, you guys went on some trip. It was some, like, very, you know, you can tell when people make a post that's where you're like, you're still kind of making a joke, but you're like, oh no, there's some truth and heart behind that one. And it was you and your sure. gal somewhere. And I was like, oh, cool. Like Marky Mark's happy. I think that's what it was. Yeah.
Well, yeah, she's like a normal person where, you know, I'm a comic. You're a comic. We're, you know, low self-esteem, no self-worth.
Yeah.
Gotta make some money to pay the bills. But she's like, you're allowed to have money and enjoy it. And I'm like, oh, you're crazy. You son of an onion. Don't make me pull a Connery on you. But she's like, yeah, no, I mean, you got all this money. Let's do something. And she's like, let's go to Italy. I was like, I'd love to go to Italy. But you know, you just go, I can't do that. That's not for me.
Yeah.
I'm a Norman.
Yes.
But so we booked a ticket. It was fun. And we flew out there. We got a rental car. It was like an amazing vacation. Amalfi Coast, Pompeii, Rome. You name it, baby, and we did it up.
Did you did you pick up any like cool Italian phrases, or did anybody say anything that was like, you know how sometimes people come back from like England and they start saying cheers, or like
right.
like out here in Australia they say no worries a lot, and I feel like I already said that in the early 90s.
Definitely
gonna come back with it still, but
I heard get off the road, homo, once or twice, but that was just because the driving was all fucked up and I had a stick shift and those mountains, you're driving on like a fucking dirt road with a donkey up your ass. It's a whole thing.
Yeah, trying to sell your ravioli on the side of the road. You're like, dude,
yeah.
I don't care how old you are and how gay you are.
Right, but I did get recognized. You know, you ever been to Pompeii?
No.
It's this old ancient city that was, I guess, burned through a volcano,
yes.
came down and ruined it. Was it a volcano?
That sounds right.
Yeah, I think it was a volcano. And so, like, some of the people are just frozen, like still just, you know, black bone, frozen, moving. Like, there's a dog that's still on a chain, and it's, you know,
holy
frozen
shit.
In lava.
It was the original bidet in Tussauds Wax Museum.
Exactly. So... I'm in the brothel. It's like an old brothel, and you're like, they used to fuck here, and that was a bed. That's where they kept the hookers.
Wait a second.
And I got please recognized.
Please tell me that's where the tour guide was. Yeah, I used to fuck there. That was the first 69. The first well, in Italian, it was a 39. It was just back to back and cock to cock. What?
Right.
Wait,
probably
what?
Those Romans were definitely into the gay stuff. I heard
they were freaky. Yeah. Wait. So you got recognized?
I got some lady was like, oh, I heard your voice. You're that douche from the YouTube. I'm like, yeah, that's me. She's like, oh, I love your stuff. So that was fun.
That's incredible. Dude,
all the places.
That is truly the, like, YouTube is, and you put your special out for lunch or out to lunch?
Out to lunch.
Out to
like,
lunch.
I'm out of it.
so fucking good. And I know you've spoken a great length about, you know, how you just said, fuck it, and you're going to put it up there, which probably, I mean, you know, over three mil right at this point and still climbing.
Yeah, we just hit 3.7.
Dude, that's bonkers. And
oh, thanks.
I don't know if they give you numbers from Netflix or Hulu or PAX, wherever you're getting your special viewed, but like YouTube is just, and look, Netflix is great. And yeah, would I want one up there? For sure.
Sure.
But dude, if you got the notoriety and clout that you got, and it's like YouTube is just almost quicker and more accessible, I feel like, than Netflix. When I pull shit up on my phone to watch on YouTube, I mean, it's literally like a couple clicks. It's like, and there we go. I'm watching Two Girls, One Cup outtakes. And it's like, you know, which, by the way, that's the power of YouTube. Those girls are walking around somewhere, maybe in the volcanoes of Pompeii. And they're like, hey, are you that, girl that, you know, that avoided a Connery and ate some shit? But did you expect it was going to get that type of viewership? Because, you know, from like your podcast appearances and just how you are revered as a comic and a dude, like that people are supportive and hold you in a high regard. But like, do you still ever, are you like, all right, fuck yeah, this is going to be the move? Or was it more of like, fuck, this is the only move?
It was a complete failure. It was a complete desperation move. I have no other options. I was pegged into a corner is what I was. I was like, nobody wants this. Nobody's buying. Nobody's biting. Let's do this. Now it was a last ditch effort. Like, all right, this is all we got. You know, it was like that last call moment when it's 4 a.m. and they're kicking everybody out of the bar. And you're like, you got shot down by every gal. You're like, all right, I guess I'll go home with this, you know, guy in a wheelchair. And that was what the YouTube
He's the
was.
Only one who appreciates my beatboxing skills.
Yeah, exactly. So I went with the tube, and now I'm so glad I did. It's you always hear those stories about showbiz. Oh, you know, this guy was late and they had to throw this guy on set and he ended up doing great or whatever it was. It's just the same thing. Like, now I'm so glad it's up there. I own it. I can share it. I can cut it up. I can do whatever I want. So it all worked out.
There's nobody there, but there's somebody there. And I see you. Hey guys, comedian Adam Ray here. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. I hope you're enjoying the episode and I hope you're doing okay. It's a crazy, crazy time right now. And if you're a little uneasy, I get that. And I've also got the answer. Koi CBD. Say it with me. Koi CBD. Feels good. And it does feel good because I use all their products. I've been fucking with the fellas at Koi CBD since my circumcision. And I'll tell you this much. They're the best in the game. Okay? Gummies, bath bombs, tinctures, joints, creams, oils. They got stuff for pets. Koi CBD has been giving the people what they need to feel better, to mellow out, to go to sleep right, to take away the aches and pains with the creams and oils. The bath bombs make bathing just the best thing ever. You get a little radiation high from the balms. I don't know what's in it, but fucking goodness and just all sorts of, it's amazing, okay? It feels like drugs, and it's not, because it's CBD. So if you want to get these amazing products, and I know you do because I got the Adam Ray stamp of approval, go to KoiCBD.com and put in the code ALN15 to get 15% off your first order. KoiCBD.com, the promo code ALN15 to get 15% off your first order. Do it today and start living and feeling the right way. And now back to the episode. Did you get hit up by a bunch of, you know, comics? I want to know what comics reached out to you that you were like, oh shit, I didn't know. Because obviously now with social media and anything and people knowing people, I'm sure people could get your number and be like, yo, we haven't met, really enjoyed the special. Did you get some of that? And on the flip side, did you get people that you haven't talked to in like 20 years that were blowing you up being like, hey man, fucking, you know, there's still people even that just are learning that you're doing
yes.
it. Or if they see something that they deem is like making it, then they're like,
right,
all right, now I can send them a text and be like, dude, I was watching some fucking 9/11 conspiracy videos and your shit was recommended next, dude. Really funny. Like, good for you. Keep doing your thing, man. And you're like, yeah, you know what? I was thinking about not doing it, but this piece of you really just kind of put me over the edge to trudge on. But you know what I'm saying? Did you get some of that?
All kinds of cool love. I mean, that's the one good thing about YouTube is you get to be the underdog. You know, everybody loves the, you know, the Gaffigans and the Bill Burrs and the Chappelles and all these mega comics. But as the underdog, because, you know, you've seen the internet. It's just full of hate. It's like, how can we ruin this person? How can we take them down a notch? And as the underdog, you kind of get away with that. You kind of dodge all that because they're like, oh, I see myself in you. And that's one for the good guys and fuck the man and fuck the industry. So if you read my comments, they're pretty positive. But the weird thing is, like you said, every now and then it's like, oh, no, I just discovered you today. And you're like, today? This has been up for a year, you cum guzzler. What the hell? I got every podcast up my ass. I've been doing comedy for 12, 13 years. Yeah. But hey, I'll take it.
Yeah. Were there any, were you like the goofy kid in high school? I don't know if we talked about that last time. Yeah, you were. Were you the one that could make jokes to not only get out of trouble, but like, would you do silly shit to kind of replace maybe a project? Like, I used to always convince teachers to let me make stupid videos instead of like doing, you know, so whatever the project was. It was like, can I make a video instead? And they're like, you fucking Jew. Yeah, like whatever you think is. But no one else was doing that. So they were all, and they also kind of wanted to see it. So, and it would always just be barely a B, you know,
right?
Production wise and whatever. But there were always a couple moments that like got them. So it was like, all right, I can't fail him. That thing about Connery did make me laugh, you know?
Right.
But did you?
That's pretty genius of you, though, to just be like, I can't do this, but I can do that. And once they see it, they're like, all right, that was pretty good. That's pretty smart as a kid.
Yeah, I mean, it did, you know, it was probably because my dad left, but it's probably, there's something, that was the last thing he said before he peaced out. He was like, always do projects instead of the, do videos instead. I was like, wait, what? Oh, I'll email it to you. but no, it definitely made me, it was just out of wanting to not, it was just seeing what was more fun, you know? And I knew once I recognized like nobody else was doing that, it was like, oh, okay, cool. Then this is going to stand out even more, even if it is terrible, because nobody has the, you know, even the any sort of, you know, fortitude to be like, oh, can we get the camera? Who's got the camera?
Right.
Get this? Especially at that point in high school, this was, you know, late 90s, where it was like there was one video production class and it was mostly, you know, people that you didn't really see too much around school because they were just kind of locked in that room.
The AV club.
Yeah, the AV
club. Weirdos. Now they'd be known as school shooters, but back then it was the AV club.
Dude,
different times.
Made homies with some of those guys. There was this little Mexican kid named Francisco, and then a guy named Sam who's now Samantha. And
hey, there you go.
Yeah. And
Totally. I would do all kinds of. I mean, for me, I don't know about you, but I think we're similar in the same thing as when I'm uncomfortable, I've never been funnier. That's when I'm funniest. Like I'm at a weird wedding, or you run into an ex, or you know, you're awkward. You're like the one guy, white guy at a hip hop show. I'm just zinging and zanging because I'm fucking freaking out in my head.
Yeah.
High school was just 4 years of that.
Oh, for real?
Oh, I had the sweatiest armpits. I was still kind of a bedwetter. I had acne. I had braces. I was a mess.
Holy shit. And would you acknowledge it? Would you do like what Brad does? You know how Brad Williams he'll be the first one to make a little person joke to make other people comfortable, which is, you know, brilliant so that he can just kind of like, you know, hang out normally. But so if you walk, were you going into places being like, hey, fucking zit braces zitties here or something like some sort of.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
totally. I would just walk in and go, look at this. You know, it's just my big yellow. I went to a Catholic high school with a uniform. So it was just yellow armpits because I was like this all day, just terrified, sweating, anxiety. And, you know, always make fun of yourself before I remember I'd wet the bed at a sleepover and I'd be the first one at 8 a.m. in the morning, go, hey, look at this, fellas. I'm marking my territory. Get it? I'm golden shower, whatever it was, just because it would sting so bad if they did it.
Dude, I was the exact same way as a fat kid. I'd be out on recess being like, hey, after kickball, who's got time for a titty fuck? You know, just so it wasn't.
That's great. And everybody loves the titty fuck kid. Everybody. I mean, even Jared Fogle, especially. But everybody loves that kid.
Yeah, they didn't even call me Adam until the sixth grade. It was titty fuck kid from third to fifth.
TFK, baby. Yeah, everybody loves that kid, but that's what you got to do. I mean, because it's always easier than the insult coming your way.
Yeah, I think so. That's definitely going to be something that I think if I have kids that I pass on like first and foremost, right?
Completely. Because
kids are so, I mean, and I don't know if it was also elementary school, but high school especially, high school, I think kids are a little more aware of the damage they're doing with zingers. But
yeah,
in elementary school, kids are just kind of like, you still have no filter and you're not really picking up on emotional wear and tears.
Yes.
Like they weren't they weren't calling me Jello Jiggler and then like waiting around to see me cry. They just fucking throw it and then walk back to finish, you know, tetherball. But
completely. Like I went to bed once, and to your point, I've told the story before, but I woke up at a sleepover. Everybody was standing above me, like five boys and the mom. And one kid goes, I was soaking wet. One kid goes, why do you do this? And he was completely sincere. It wasn't like, fuck you, why do you do this, weirdo? It was like, what's wrong with you? But he was a kid. So he was just like, what are you doing? Why would you do that?
Jesus Christ.
He had no idea how that would sting.
How long were you doing that for?
I probably stopped at 12, 13.
Yeah, my nieces have, and they don't
listen, really,
so I don't think they give a shit if I talk about it, but they're 11, they're twins, and they, and then one of them even wakes up and doesn't have the energy or just whatever, can't make it up the stairs. So we'll like go in the corner of the room, like on towels and stuff. Yep. I'll probably take this episode down before they start dating, but
yeah, I've never heard of that. That seems like, Is she in a like a rascal? Like, what's the deal with the stairs?
She's a rebel. I think that's what it is. It's where it's like, I'm not going to be told how to live my life. Like, enough of this. Like, you know, like fight the man. Like, oh, I have to wear a seatbelt. I have to pee in a toilet. You know, like,
right? She's a rebel without a toilet. That's crazy. A rebel without a can.
Yeah, yeah.
But
did
I don't get it? Go upstairs, you psycho.
Dude,
no offense.
I know I've said worse shit to her, but it's like, which is probably not helping. But yeah, it's the, you know, there's the creativity too, the lack thereof for kid insults. Like there was a kid that would throw the the fat jokes my way, and he wore really tight sweatpants. So all I would do is call him tight pants. And dude, that did more damage than the fat jokes he was throwing my way that actually, you know, made sense, you know?
Right.
I was just
because that's just so accurate. You're like, why do you have tight pants? What the hell's wrong with you? Go, you can buy looser pants.
Yeah. And maybe he couldn't. Maybe it was like a...
That's what it is.
It was a money thing, and his mom like could only afford one pair of sweatpants. And maybe, maybe before she passed away, she like bought him that one pair. And so he didn't want to take them off.
Yes.
Or he's...
Sorry.
No,
what were you
going to
say?
No. I was just going to say, or maybe.
I was just going to say the more creative it is, actually, the less it stings, because it's like, if it's clever and everything, you're like, all right, that was a good joke. But if it's just direct, like tight pants, or hey, bitch tits, or hey, snaggletooth, or whatever, that hurts more.
Snaggletooth one sucked. There was a girl named Jill Warren, and she had a couple real big fangs in the sixth grade. But when she laughed, they were like, it was like endearing, because those things just came out to play when she laughed.
Yeah,
full exposure. They had a front row seat to every conversation. And
right.
And she one day, it was snack day. I've told this story before, but it's a classic. It was silent reading, and which is, by the way, if you don't take it upon yourself to leave the room, if you got a fart that day, like silent reading, like that's when a lot of kids got exposed. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. I must have heard four farts every day during silent reading, because people just assume like, oh, like that's another thing about kids. And part of me like respects it looking back, where it's just like fucking there was one kid that would just do it. And would just fucking like everyone would look up in his direction. And he would just be like,
yeah, you see, you got to own it.
Yeah,
that's the key. If you're going, oh, shit, you're done for. It's almost like performing in front of a black crowd. If you show any kind of fear, you're done. But if you just own that you're a dorky honky, they love you.
That's exactly right. So I start chowing down on my snack, and then I'm finished. And then she's got some crackers, some regular saltine crackers, and they look delicious. I was like, you going to finish those? She's like, do you want them? And I was like, yeah. That's what me asking if you were going to finish them was all about. And then she hands them over, and I start chomping down. And then fucking here comes Tweedledee and Tweedletooth, and they're just fucking watching, just getting all giddy. And I'm like, what's so funny? As she's laughing, and she goes, my brother farted on those crackers.
Oh, you got had by old fang face.
But dude, here's how chunky I was. I was just like, all of them?
Yeah, that's a pretty good line.
Yeah. So I wasn't
good for you. My brother was a real tubby bitch, and he was a big porker. And if we were fighting and I was just like, you fat, whatever, he would lose. I mean, he was like Hulk. He would just turn red and just attack.
Wow.
That just hit him so hard. I mean, that fat kid shit is no joke.
Did you did your family encourage the joking? Like, was your bro a good one to go back and forth with, or no?
No. He was a temper guy. He would just jump on you. And my parents didn't like it, but my parents did a thing where they would insult you kind of on accident, and it hurt so bad. I've told this story before, but one time I was holding court at like a family function, like a reunion or a Thanksgiving, whatever. I was probably like 7, 8.
Holy
and I'm
shit.
Killing with like a group of 8 people, adults, kids, cousins, whatever. And my dad walks up and goes, "Are you holding court?" And just walked away. And I was like, "Oh,
oh man.
I don't know why. I felt like I was this big. It just shrunk me down." Because he was right. I thought I was cool for a second. He fucking nailed me.
By the way, don't you want to do the opposite of that? And I guess, unless he was also trying and you were fucking stealing. Like, did he make a couple jokes at the beginning of the night and here comes the headliner?
Oh, maybe. But, you know, if he wants to make jokes, go nuts. I'm not going to hold you back. But, oh, and I don't even know if he was trying to hurt me. But, I think about this to this day.
That's like the equivalent of, like, instead of, you know, that's like the I'm disappointed in you versus, like, really screaming at you. Which is kind of
right.
Like a little more subtle and passive.
Yes. Yeah. It's almost like if you wear a new leather jacket to the comedy store.
Oh, yeah.
That moment you walk in, they just go, "Oh, what are you? Look who thinks he's hot shit with his jacket." And you're like, "Oh, I did think I was hot shit. God damn it.
Yeah. Is what kind of shit would you do? I always wanted to be that kid and I never had the balls to do it. Like, I didn't even start. For whatever reason, I was always so apprehensive to be jokey around my family until I got older and just more comfortable in doing that. So like,
yeah,
I was just so shy, and which was weird because I'd be doing it around my friends and then I would come home and then just not be that version. So it was like almost like I was taking steps backwards because I'd like go into this shell and not be trying to do it. But it was
completely same.
Oh really?
Completely exactly the same. I was killing at school, killing at work or wherever I am, killing with friends, then you go home and I was just,
why is that?
I think because your parent, first of all, to be funny, you got to be, you know, you're shucky and jivey. You got to pretend to be confident. You got to pretend to be kind of cool, I guess. And you're almost performing. And your parents know you so well that I think they're like, they can see through it.
So if you would do well, like a Thanksgiving or a family thing, would somebody, like your dad said that kind of like maybe, you know, put a little dagger in the heart, but would anybody be like, pull you aside after or say something later that was like, man, you said some really, what was that thing you said at dinner? Or what
yes.
did you? Yeah.
And that would keep me going. That little aside would keep me going, but I would do a joke at the Thanksgiving table and everybody would laugh. And my parents would roll their eyes like, "Oh, this fucking idiot." And I'm like, "Hey, you queefs, how about a little pride for your, you know, douchebag attention seeking son?" But they were too hard to get. I don't know what it is about. I guess because they're like, "Oh, him, you know, he's a cut up." But the other people are like, "No, that was a good bit." But
yeah,
what are you gonna do? It's your parents.
Have you talked to Seinfeld in a while? Just thinking about like just how I'm sure at some point, once all that started to transpire, I'm sure your folks were like, "Oh, yeah." They think back to those early days, probably with like, "Fuck!" Like your dad, like when he said, "Look at you holding court," and then like, you're kicking it with Seinfeld. There's got to be a part of them that's like, fuck, like that. What maybe like where you try to replay shit in your mind, being like, yeah, I guess I did like that. That all makes sense. Or like, man, I should have been. That could have been me hanging
way
out with
too
Seinfeld.
Much, way too much credit. They're not thinking about that shit at all. They're going, "Wow, that's crazy." You know, Seinfeld. I don't think they thought I was funny ever growing up. Maybe if I like shit my pants, they'd be like, "Look at this idiot." But I don't think they. You know, when I told them I was going to be a comic, they're like, "Ah, yeah, whatever, you know, do what you got to do." But I think they like the later part. Like, "Oh, your son's on Conan. I saw him on Conan." They're like, "Yeah, that's my son." So that part's cool. But I don't think they were ever like, "This kid's got something," which maybe you need a little of that. Maybe that propelled me because I had to prove them wrong. I don't know. But
yeah, I think if you're just getting coached and encouraged on all fronts, that's almost probably detrimental because –
totally.
Like you just got this huge safety blanket. And I feel like you got to feel like you don't have that so that you got to kind of, you know, create your own out of queefs or whatever you said. When did queef start getting into your rotation, by the way? Because it's definitely one of my favorite words. Not one of my favorite songs, but one of my favorite words. And I feel like it's, you know, my first joke that incorporated it was when I worked at Universal Studios, and I would always walk by the Abercrombie and Fitch when I had to check in to play Wolverine, and I always have to walk through the gate that was right in between Carl Strauss, the brewery, and Abercrombie and Fitch. And even at like 7 a.m., there'd be some shirtless hottie just out there just being like, "What's up, dude? You want a fucking t-shirt with the nipples cut out? 40% off." And I'm like, "I'm cool, Gavin." And he's like, "How'd you know?" And I'm like, "Come on, man." And but then I would make a joke about how, I think the joke was, this was maybe year two of comedy. I was like, "Oh, I smelt an Abercrombie and Fitch the other day from 600 yards away." And then it was something about the cologne smelling like a unicorn queef.
Oh, that's great.
And then this whole long, unnecessary, tangential riff about like the guys who went out to like find the unicorn, get it to queef, bottle it, get it back. And then like this whole argument, like this side argument between the two guys about how to make a unicorn queef. And then and then once you get it, like getting it back and selling it and how much to price it for. When did it start making its way into the Mark Norman repertoire?
That's hilarious. But I think for me was just trying to find funny stuff quick, because obviously a bit can be funny or a joke can be funny, but there's a lot of setup. And there's a very few amount of words that are funny, just the word.
Wow.
Queef is just a funny word. And I think I used to get heckled a lot because I was shitty at comedy. And I'd have to come up with stuff to like trash the lady. And I'd be like, "All right, somebody just had a mouth queef there," whatever it was. And that killed. And I remember being like, "Queef's a funny." And I just never forgot that and never stopped using it.
That's so smart, because like you do when you're getting going and you're like, "I need to like... you know, this, I'm trying to this whole time give myself an opportunity to get better." And if you truly, it's like if you can even recognizing on in the in between moments of trying out bits that may or may not work, you still got to keep the audience engaged. And sometimes they just are, because hopefully you're at a decent show that's early on where people are paying attention. But also it's like if a couple things don't go your way and they're just like, "Eh," then it's like, yeah, you throw out something like that. You've now got them for another two jokes, hopefully, right?
Right. Completely. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. I mean, that's the name of the game. I mean, Bill Burr always says, when you're starting out, every show is an away game. And you got to earn their trust quick and get them to think you're funny quick. And you got to have funny ideas, funny jokes, and not these long-ass setups and stories. So Queef was just like, "That's funny, that's quick. I'm putting it in my back pocket." Calling myself gay, I have people like that. That's in the back pocket. Jews. Okay, they're funny. There you go. Just whatever it is. So I just got this quiver full of quips, and I just pull them out when I need them.
Have you ever been or chatted with Seinfeld where he's just like sent one of those back to you? Like now that he's gotten to know you and know your deal, like what do you think he would ever have it? Do you think he's the type of guy that would ever, like, if you're sitting there at a cafe having some coffee and somebody did something kind of silly, and he was like, "Well, look at that queef. You think that's
his queef is being a cunt. That's his move. Like when the lady, whatever, Kesha was like, "Hey, you want a hug?" He's like, "Oh, yeah. No, I don't want a hug." That's his queef. He's like, the waiter will say, this is a Seinfeld move right here. The waiter goes, "Okay, what do you want for breakfast?" And he goes, "I'll have the eggs, sunny side up, no hash browns." And the waiter goes, "Actually, it doesn't come with hash browns." And he goes, "Okay." That's a Seinfeld queef right there. That, and we all die at the table because obviously he didn't want it. And so why tell him it doesn't come with it? And that's him. That's his version of that.
That's so funny. By the way, he did a version of that to me when he came in on my Sunday night show at Gotham. This was maybe 4 years ago. And Mazzilli called me up and was like, "Hey, Seinfeld wants to know if he can, he's going to come in. I'm just calling you." Just a very, it's again, one of the great things about Gotham and Mazzilli about being courteous to be like, "I want to give you a heads up if I just start crying and throwing up." And he goes, "Just to let you know, like, is it cool?" I'm like, "Yeah, obviously. Like, has anybody ever said no?"
Right.
He's like, "No." And so then he comes down and I walk up and he's waiting to go on basically just before me. And so I was like, "Hey, Jerry, what's up, man? Like, God, this is incredible having you here. My name's Adam. I'm the one whose weekend it is. I go, thanks for coming down. And he goes, I'm not here for you. But with a big smile, but with a big smile on his face. Like,
yeah, yeah.
He laughed like as he was saying it, and then laughed and then said, very nice to meet you. I just shot an episode of Curb. So I like use that as a way to kind of be like, hey, we both know what Larry David smells like, you know? And but he was sweet, but he did that, and it was, you know, it was, had he not laughed and smiled through it, yeah, I probably would have been like, oh man, that was a bummer. But it was like, yeah. he knew that it was nice that he like let me in on the moment to have the moment, you know, which I think
totally
is, yeah.
And he would only do that because he knows you're a comic and he knows you'll get it.
Right.
You know, because I think a civilian would just take that and run with it. Like, oh, what an asshole. He's so mean. But you got it with the smile and everything. But you see how that could be painful. That's kind of a shitty move.
Yeah. Is there he's not doing any of these outdoor shows, is he?
No. I mean, come on. He can't be seen, you know, getting a frisbee to the head in the park. Like, that's not going to happen. So, I think he's pretty COVID crazy. And also, if you're that big of a celebrity, if he does one thing, it's going to be a giant news story. So, he'd just be fucked. So, I think his fame has kept him from doing these crazy, ridiculous gigs. That's one thing. I don't know how you feel. Like, we're both doing okay, but we're not famous. And I got to tell you, I like it. I every day I'm not famous, I kind of go, well, if I was famous, I'd be ruined there. If I was famous, that would have fucked my life up. So it's kind of nice.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's like being able to, I thought about that just being down here when I got out of quarantine, and I just kind of like walked out and I'm just looked like just complete trash. And I'm wearing these sweats that got cum stains and ketchup on them. And
that's a horrible radio morning team.
Yeah,
gum stains and ketchup.
Yeah. It's a ketchup. Yeah, where is
morning?
Is that Denver?
I think it's Cincinnati.
Yeah, Cincinnati for sure. That's you do that on your way to do the bananas. Go bananas.
yeah.
I did a podcast at a McDonald's my first time I was there, and I was so excited.
Wow.
It was like my second road gig, and I was so excited to be doing it that I was, this kid was like, "I'm just starting a podcast. When you want to meet me at this McDonald's?" And I was like, I'm probably going to get murdered, but like, you know, at least like there's be enough employees around. Like McDonald's is never working with like one guy at the register and one cook. It's always like too many people sitting around looking for, syringes in the ball pit or whatnot. So, so I'm outside just being like, I just look, but I didn't have to even, you know, think twice about, oh, is there going to be some pirazzi just around the corner trying to
get
some Aussie cum stains. Yeah,
exactly. And that's a beautiful thing. And you better, cause you'll pop, or hopefully one of us will pop. And I think we're going to look back and go, damn, those were good times when I had the sweats on and I was, you know, rubbing one out in an alley or whatever.
You can still do that. You just got to find the right alley.
Yeah. Well, I know
Louie. Kirstie.
So, what's that?
He said, maybe Kirstie.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
that's a lot of surface area to jizz on. Well, by the way, she's like back in the news now. It feels like 1989.
Some people are jumping on the Trump bandwagon as far as like a way to get themselves. It really is like you make one little comment, you support him with a little bit of fame, and dude, yeah, you're back in the limelight. I don't know if it's the limelight. But it's maybe the crime light, but you're definitely all over the front page. I did see, I don't know I think it was CNN that made this tweet where she tweeted something at CNN about being whatever. And it was, they made some jab about Veronica's Closet's ratings or something.
Oh, like, damn.
Yeah. It was like when you see like a fast food, I've never seen that from CNN, but I think they're just tired of taking the beat down. But,
yeah,
like you'll see every now and then, like Wendy's or Taco Bell will make some, make some joke to a competitor. There was a,
I've go ahead, that, yeah. Yeah. No, I've seen that. That's fun. I love when they do that because you're like, oh, they're human.
Yeah, I think it was like Burger King was like Wendy's, like you're like kids that eat your food are gonna die quicker. I'm paraphrasing, but it was some sort of a nasty burger jab.
Fuck it.
Are you, where is the first place that you think you'll go once things kind of get back to good? I know you're starting to do some dates, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I've been on the road. Like, if a town is open, I'll go there.
Oh, wow.
And people come out. I mean, people are dying for some chuckles, I think. So, like, they'll be like 50% capacity and they just fill up. So you feel kind of cool because you're like, I'm selling out, but it's also, they just want to get out.
I know I did Portland Helium end of September, and it was, man, one of the best weekends I've had in a while. Because of, like you said, like, it's, you know, full as it can be. People are just so happy to be there. I'm pumped to be there. And I think if you're doing your job and you're like, you know, hopefully somewhat as prolific as you are in churning out new bits, that you're excited about being on stage. I don't know how you can be unless you have new shit to say and talk about.
Right.
And then the clubs that, you know, and it seems like you have to at least have some of the protocols in order to be able to do it right now. And for the foreseeable future, probably, because there's no set date where it's all just going to stop and clubs are going to feel like they can. It's like you got to adhere to people's comfort level too. There could be some cities where people are like, and I think Florida actually is probably that city. Pictures I see from clubs there, it looks like everyone's just sitting with their dicks and clits out, just being like, COVID can't hit that, can it?
Right. Yeah, Florida's gone nuts. They're wide open, which is, it's crazy. But then you're like, are there a lot of deaths there? Like, how's that working? Are we getting any results back from them being out all the time? But, you know,
I want to know the comics that do it. I want to know from them, like, when they come back, I'm like, well, what did you do? Did you mask until you got up there? Like, can we get some reports also from like those crowds? Like, did anybody get it? Are they getting even the temperature?
Exactly.
Yeah. I want to know all the details before I jump back in fully like that. But
I know. Then like you hear a couple LA guys did a bunch of gigs and they got it. And I did a gig once and my opener got it. So like, it's out there. It's not a hoax like the Holocaust, but it's out there. I don't know. I think I had it early or something, but
you did have it.
You
did have it.
I think I had it. I was sick as a dog for like 3 or 4 days in March, and it was back when it was new and nobody was really talking about it. And I went to a doctor. He's like, I don't know what this is. And I was like, oh, that's weird. But then it went away. But then I did a Zoom gig like 2 months later for some doctors, and I said, hey, after the show, can I ask you guys some questions? And they said, sure. And I told them my symptoms were like, oh, that was corona.
Wow.
Yeah.
You lose the taste?
Oh, yeah. Taste, smell, congested, fatigued like a mofo. I couldn't get off the couch. I was a mess.
Hey, guys. Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Hope you're enjoying this episode. Obviously, it's a very difficult time for everyone right now. We're all challenged in finding a day-to-day routine that makes our lives consistent and awesome. And if there's something that's interfering with your happiness right now or preventing you from achieving your goals, BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. BetterHelp is a professional counseling service online, private, and it's so convenient. I've used it for a little bit now. It's truly the only way that I've found to help get my own issues dealt with on my own time, at my own pace. You can schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your licensed professional counselor right now. They're specialized in depression, anger, stress, anxiety, family conflicts, LGBT matters, grief or relationships, sleeping, which I have a lot of trouble with, trauma, self-esteem. Anything that you share with them is confidential. And guess what? If you're not happy with your counselor for any reason, at any time, you can request a new one for no additional charge. There's 3,000 U.S. licensed therapists across all 50 states, available worldwide. And again, there's 4 ways to communicate with them: text, chat, phone, and video. You can start communicating in under 24 hours. It's available on any desktop, mobile web, Android, and iOS apps. Schedule a video or phone session, generally weekly, unless your therapist schedules more. Unless you just are really not sleeping and need to get some additional chats in,
There's broad expertise in the network, which may not be locally available in many areas. Financial aid is available for those who qualify. It's secure, it's convenient, it's professional, and above all, it's affordable, all right? It's truly the most affordable option I've found. So right now, all ALN listeners are going to get 10% off your first month with a discount code AboutLastNight. So why not get started today and start making some changes for the better in your life? You deserve it. So go to BetterHelp.com/AboutLastNight. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor that you'll love. That's BetterHelp.com/AboutLastNight. BetterHelp.com/AboutLastNight. And get 10% off your first month with promo code AboutLastNight. And now, back to the episode.
What's the no tasting like?
It sucks. It sucks because, like, you don't realize how much you smell stuff. Like, you know, you open a jar of peanut butter, you got your nose in it, and you're getting nothing. It's the weirdest feeling. You're like, everything just feels like blah. Everything feels blank.
So you must have just been eating so much ass.
I think that was the cure. That's what saved me.
Oh, shit.
That's why old people are still sick. They're not doing that. Like the youngsters.
Got to get with it, man.
Yes.
Are there certain bits that you're fired up about? And you don't have to obviously do them or talk about the context. But like, I'm curious with somebody that writes as much as you, what is, you know, how quick you're coming up with it? What are you doing? Where do you feel like you derive the most material from? Is it from going out to do other shows so that you are in the the boat of joke writing, like, you know, writing
right
where, or, you know, when you're on the way to it, you're already thinking about your set. So maybe it's making you think about other stuff, or is it being at a little gathering, or is it being online? Like, where do you feel like the most shit starts to come to you?
That's a great question. And I'll tell you, when there was no COVID, I was living in that boat. You know, when you like get on a momentum and you're like, oh, I'm thinking of jokes all the time.
Oh yeah.
Let me break this whole thing down. And I hope I don't bore you here, but I'm
so I love it.
So I feel like my process for joke ideas is like always kind of rocky. Like, oh, I got this great idea and it always bombs. I got another great idea, it always bombs. And then you start learning like, okay, these ideas aren't that great. Stop getting so excited about it. And then you get an idea and you're like, this one will work. And then it hits. Then you get another one that hits. Then another one that hits. You're like, all right, I'm in the zone. And the only way to get in that zone is to just keep doing it and doing it and doing it. And I felt like I was in that zone for months. Like, you know, September of last year, October, November, all that holiday winter time. Then COVID hit and I went way out of the zone. And I'm just starting to get back into it finally. And for me, I get all the bits when you're not thinking about the bits. Like, I went to a pet shop with my girl and, you know, he's like, I'm at a pet shop. That's a cute dog. And I had this big bit idea and then I started working out, worked. Wow. So like, for me, it's almost like falling in love. You can't try. It just kind of happens. That sounds cheesy, but you never fall in love when you think you will. And that's, I feel the same with bits. Like it hits me when you're not even thinking about it.
That's a great, analogy for it. I 1000% agree. Is it, and then how quickly, if you get a little bit of an idea, do you have to like, what, how do you differentiate between like, all right, I need to write out, you know, a good paragraph here or a bunch of the joke, the body of it, or I want to think about that like in a better space at home in my room where I can really, and I'm just going to put down enough of a nugget now and I'll get to it later.
For me, I need the stage. Like I'll write it out. And I'll say it over and over. I do it on my roof so no one can see me. It's pretty embarrassing. If you saw it, I'd kill myself because I got the pen, like a microphone, the whole thing.
Oh,
and
shit.
And I write it. Yeah. Cause I feel like if you talk it out, it becomes more natural.
1000%.
You know, whereas if it's just written on a piece of paper, then you try to go to a show with that writing in your brain, it's not good. You got to have the words in your brain.
It feels scripted.
Not the paper. Yeah. So you talk it out and then sometimes you find a bit just from talking it out. And now you've said it and your mouth has said those words in that order over and over. So you're more, you know, you're more comfortable with it on stage. And then something will bomb. Something will not go as planned. And then you got to listen back to that and then rewrite it and then keep tweaking from there.
Wow, dude, that's
it takes forever and it's humiliating. Like there's a lot of bombing with it. Like somebody could see me in Portland bomb with a premise and then see me in Phoenix 6 months later and it'd be killing, but it's not pretty.
But that's why it's great, right? I mean, like,
that's why it's great. And I love that it's hard, because otherwise everybody would do it. And, but when you know something's funny deep down in your asshole, it's, you got to keep trying it. You got to keep working. Chris Rock, did you watch the Store documentary?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was great. The last episode was amazing, where Tony Rock was like, "Hey, Chris, I killed tonight. I did 8 minutes. I killed." He goes, "Oh, great. Next night, I killed again." Chris goes, same 8 minutes. And he goes, "Yeah." And he goes, "Call me when you bomb."
Yes, I know.
And it's so true. I mean, bombing is such a part of this.
It is. Yeah. I was just telling a buddy of mine who's been, chose this as the time to start trying to get into stand up. And I was just like, you could not have picked a worse time, but good on you. And like, I'm not going to tell you not to, but I will just lay it out for you as far as what is required of it. Cause I know you're already kind of half in with your commitment right. level to it. But, and he did a few of these shows and was just already trying to ask me ways to kind of move things along and not necessarily become like a paid regular at clubs. But I was just like, dude, he's like, "Man, I've had like 5 good sets in a row." And I was like, same thing. Like you're just saying that Tony Rock said, I was like, you don't get better from crushing all the time. Yeah. You get to a point, right. like you want to be, yeah, up there always in the pocket and
sure.
you know, have all the things that you would want to be going on with someone who's, I feel like, becoming a seasoned professional, where you're likable, you're comfortable, you're trusting yourself up there, all the things that you can't get unless you just do thousands of reps, right?
Yes.
I was like, so that's
yes.
gonna come. I go, but you need these times of where you are just eating shit. And that means also too, that you're being exploratory and you're trying shit out. And he was just like, and he was like, you know, weirdly being like, "Oh, you like, well, how many times have you bombed?" I'm like, dude, recently, I couldn't tell you when, because again, you get to a point to where you go,
right.
I know I'm just so trusting in myself to get out of something or spin something funny. If it's not, either if it's putting it on myself or going into the crowd or whatever it is. So it's like, yeah, from top to bottom, I've had sets that I haven't been happy with, you know, but that's usually something that you can, you know, point back to yourself for,
yeah.
for maybe not committing fully on something that you didn't want to do or whatnot. It's almost like having a winning the game, but thinking about that those couple shots you missed, you know.
Yes.
I could have a great headline set, but if there's a couple new bits that I bailed on some parts because other things didn't go well. And so I didn't give myself a chance for it to do well. And I left off a whole minute of it. I'm like, yeah. that was a wasted set. That's how I view it. Because
totally,
I'm like, you know,
I feel the same way.
And I know it's like being hard on yourself, but and he's like, "Jesus, that's how I have to be thinking about it." I was like, "No, that's how I think about it." But that's what right. makes me double down the next how many times. And I sit in that feeling for a minute and go, "God, like, you fucking bitch for bailing yeah. on that." And then,
yeah, same, man. It's bailing on a bit is like going to the gym and let's say you can bench 300 pounds. That's like going to the gym and benching 80. Like, there was no point. What's yeah. the point? You just wasted that gym. You got to push it, man. You got to build that muscle. But the problem with this is now some horrible hack is out there going, "Hey, I bomb all the time. I'm the fucking man." Like, yeah. no, you still suck. Yeah. There's a scale here, you know,
yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I saw I was at the Store. This is, I don't know, everything is so far away now, but that's probably like January. I saw Bill Burr go up in the main room, kind of have a rough one. I don't want to try, you know, I'm a huge fan. I'm not trying to, sure, whatever. Sure. Then he went to the belly room, had another rough one. OR, rough one. And I followed him like a stalker the whole way around. Awesome. Then he went back to the main room, crushed, went to the belly room, had a weird one. OR, crushed, main room. He just kept going back to all three all night. And he was, shit. The bit was building momentum and the bit was getting better and better. And he was getting data from each crowd. It was amazing. It was like a masterclass.
I know. Yeah. That getting to do, how many sets would you do in a night if you could?
If I could, I would yeah. do as many as, like, I mean, I was up to about 4 on average a night in New York.
Wow. That seems about good to me. I've done that a handful of times in LA. It's easy when you got the 3 clubs around, but then like
yeah.
4th is either a weird alt show or then driving to the Ice House in Pasadena, which makes it trickier, the Ha Ha or something. But 4 seems like a really great number to get a lot of chances to on something new, like to where you're not, you're still excited to do it the next day and maybe not exhausted from it. Right.
Yes. Yes. Completely.
Or start to almost like over editing, you know, a movie or something where you're like, all right, we've you know, gone through five drafts in a row on this. Like, maybe we should step away from it for a day and come back to it and, you know, yeah, reassess.
Definitely, definitely. Now you're making me miss it. Ah.
I know, fuck. Well, your special, Out to Lunch, out everywhere for people to fucking rock and roll to and jerk it to. Has anybody, have you gotten any sort of weird, like, you know, you're not on OnlyFans, I don't think.
No, I'm not hot enough or whatever. I'm not that guy. I don't know. I would do it.
Somebody told me they were putting like stand-up clips on Pornhub, and I was like, yeah, it makes sense that there's going to be other like avenues like that to put, like, obviously, guys, when people start putting shit up on TikTok, do you have people doing that with your stuff on TikTok?
Yeah, like lip syncing? That's flattering. That feels good. Some, yeah, you know, 16-year-old is like, you know, doing the lip sync.
Yeah, that's crazy. Do you, have you had really young fans reach out to you just with comedy questions or?
Oh, yeah. Oh, these kids are so bold. They'll be like, hey, here's my hour special I filmed in my basement with my eight friends. Can you watch it and then give me notes and then, you know, blow me? And I'm like, wait, what? How'd we get here? Like, you got to do the work there, kiddo. I can't do the work.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, lastly, before we get out of here, what?
Did you write these down, these questions, or this is all off the noggin?
This is, I mean, things I think about, but also it's easy when you have, when I'm genuinely interested in somebody, it's easy to chat. So, yeah, man.
Come on.
That's the answer. But the last question, this one is, I did write this down. What do you think is cooler to cooler place to get a hand job, an Uber or a taxi? That was the only scripted question today.
That's a good question. That's a good question. Now, am I paying for the Uber or the taxi, or am I just in one?
You're just
in one. Is this an Uber pool? If it's an Uber pool, then that's impressive to get that game that quick. It's some chick you just met, or dude.
Yeah, yeah, hey.
Or is it me and the driver?
Let's go. Let's go Uber Black, or one of those big taxi vans.
But again, am I with a date or am I with? I don't get the circumstance, but
yeah, you're right. This is a bad question. Mark, what's your favorite instrument? No. Okay. How about this? It's with a date, and she paid for the ride.
I'm going cab, and I'll tell you why.
Great.
One, a cabbie doesn't have your information. I'll pay with cash. You know, you blow a load on that back seat. You don't want that guy. He's got my DNA. I don't want to have my credit card info. So cab it is. Cab has got some anonymity to it, you know. Plus, there's a barrier between me and the Middle Eastern man. You know, he's got a piece of glass there. It's not the Uber guy can just, hey, what are you doing? But the cabbie, he's got that. He can't get through that partition. So I'm definitely going cab. Throw a 20 at the guy and get the hell out of there.
Yeah. Also, there's a. You know, there's like fees. Like if you puke in the back of an Uber, there's a $100 fee. There's probably a jizz fee in a cab. Oh. In a cab, what's the fee? A dirty look?
Exactly. You
know, a shitty.
Exactly.
Cab. Too much eye contact on the way out, or right. Dirty.
Maybe you'll get one of these. You know, on the way out. But yeah, the Uber, that's no good. Plus, there goes your rating. You get a jizz rating for that. Give me the cab any day.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Well, I had other questions, but I think that's how we're going to end it. That's a great answer.
All right. Good to see you, buddy.
Mark, you're the man. Yeah, dude. Really, really a treat to hang with you, man. So thanks for doing this. Well, Crush on the Road. What this is going to be out next week. So what are all your dates coming up?
Next week, this week I'm at Cleveland. Next week I'm in Greenville at the Comedy Zone. Not bragging. Greenville, South Carolina. There it is. Then I'm in New Orleans doing some shows for Thanksgiving. Cool. And Stress Factory, Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Awesome.
And Spokane, if it opens. Spokane Comedy Club. That's your neck of the jizz there.
Yeah, that
is. And so all kinds of fun stuff. And 2021 calendar is packed to the gills, but who knows if we'll make it there.
Is it really? That's awesome. Yeah, it should be. Shows in New Orleans. That's exciting. Back home.
Yeah, hometown hero. Get to go home. My buddy bought a restaurant, so he's with my high school friend So he's like, do a show here. I got a little back room. So we're going to do two shows on the 24th of November.
Dude, that's awesome. That's what I want to have. I have a buddy who just bought a brewery in a area, a nice area of Seattle. And, you know, there's no real, there's Tacoma Comedy Club, but there's no, in greater Seattle, there's no club really anymore. There's laughs.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Parlor shut down. I'm trying to work with some guys to get one going. The guys that do Tempe Improv and Stand Up Live and all that. Because
nice.
there needs to be there. I have an area that is so untapped that people just, you know, no comic from Seattle is thinking about opening one, and no comic lived in this area where I grew up. And it's just, it's so prime, dude. And it's just about me convincing these guys, which they're, you know, everything hit. Otherwise they were going to, we're all going to take a trip up there and scout it out. But, but yeah, having a buddy with a spot like that, it's like, you just want to have a spot you can come back to also. Pop into, set up a show on a whim, especially when you're at your level and you can just send out a quick tweet and be like, queef, and then 40 people show up, you know?
like your bat dream. Signal. Just like the bat, yeah, I was going to say, you beat me to it, the queef signal. I don't know how you would represent a queef in a signal, but we'll figure it out.
Silhouette? Yeah, how do you do it? What's the queef silhouette?
You have a labia with like a air... You know, like a mist coming out. I don't know.
Yeah. Or maybe it's like, maybe it's a labia, and then you have like a silhouette of like a person behind going.
There you go.
There it is.
You heard it here first, folks.
Sketch it up. Mark, I love you, man. Be safe out there.
Good to see you, Fatty. Praise Allah.
See you, buddy.